Good afternoon. You are listening to WMRWLP, broadcasting out of Warren, Vermont, at 94.5 FM on your dial and streaming live at WMRW.org. The following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, RootsWork. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Amy, and you are listening to The 5-H Show. And the 5-H's stand for health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And I am live in the studio today on November 17th, 2024, with Dr. Rob Williams. And Dr. Rob Williams, among many other things, including being a father, a husband, a farmer, a travel blogger, a media producer. He teaches media literacy, and he also does geoengineering research. He has a BA in U.S. and American Studies from Princeton University in 1989, and a PhD in U.S. Environmental History in 2000 from the University of New Mexico. He is a conspiracy theorist practitioner and an inventor of all sorts of important phrases like Team Human. And he is probably the biggest cheerleader for Team Human. I think the captain of the cheerleading crew.
I don't know, Amy. I think you're my co-captain.
Yes. Well, I couldn't believe it reading your book. So you've come in today to talk about, among many other things. Mm. But your book that you just released really encapsulates everything, right, that yeah. You've been taking care of and carrying all these years. And it's called Beings Human, A Most Magnificent Conspiracy.
Miraculous.
Oh, miraculous.
Yes, that's okay. I like magnificent, but I love miraculous.
Yes, I love miraculous better. Yes, that's the right word.
Beings Human, A Most Miraculous Conspiracy. Yeah, it's a collection of writings from the past 10 years or so that I just put together into sort of an anthology. So the first chapter, I should say, for folks who would like to read Beings Human for free, Dr. spelled out, Rob Williams, drrobwilliams.com, on the blog page near the top. You can find an ebook version. The first chapter is about breathing. The second chapter is about one of my favorite creatures, the yuck. The third and fourth chapters are about media literacy. The fifth chapter is about Vermont independence, specifically, but decentralist thinking more generally. And the sixth chapter is about the COVID-topian phenomenon that we have just lived through, and I think are still living through. As much as some people would like to put that to bed, I don't think it's gone anywhere. It's certainly a bit dormant at the moment, but for those of us awake, I would say, and paying attention, there's a lot going out there, positive and maybe not so much. And on the phrase conspiracy theory, the Russians actually have a great term called conspirology, which is the study of conspiracies. And I much prefer that term.
Okay.
And I'm not opposed to the term conspiracy theory, but for those who are familiar with the history of that phrase, conspiracy theory, it is a weaponized term. Mm-hmm. It is a term that was delivered injected, let's say, into the U.S. body politic in the late 1960s, the phrase conspiracy theory, to put off those askers of pesky questions
like
about,
<us.
laughs> yes, about the John F. Kennedy assassination, and then, of course, subsequent, the assassinations of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., and John F. Kennedy's brother, Robert F. Kennedy Sr., in 1968. And we've actually documented, historians, we have documented how that phrase was dreamed up by the Central Intelligence Agency and then injected into media organs, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And this is one of the things that these so-called permanent bureaucracies do, like the CIA, is massage our thinking and our feeling and our behavior via their influence over these modern mass media propaganda organs. So the phrase conspirology, I think, is a much better phrase, referring to the study of these real conspiracies, like the one I just mentioned.
I love that, conspirology.
Isn't that great?
That's great.
Yeah, and
that's where we met back in the day, I think, at
yes.
a media literacy, doing media literacy work back in the day. So I was so thrilled that you've really kept that as a key component
of
this book, of your studies, and you've really broken it down, how this massaging of our minds
yes.
has happened. I've got a little clip. It's just about 5 minutes,
please.
But it's from your website. If people go to Dr. Rob Williams. .com? Yeah, drrobwilliams.com. You can watch this full video. I cut it down a little bit, but I love that it gives you like this movie star feeling, because
yes.
it is true.
You've got this
media production side that I'm bringing to the radio here for our listeners.
All right.
So just a moment, we're going to meet Dr. Rob on the screen in full living color. Here we go.
I'd invite Vermonters, close your eyes. Take a nice breath in through your nose, nice breath out. And imagine your favorite place in Vermont. A place for you that captures the spirit of Vermont as you imagine it to be. What does it look like in your mind's eye? What does it feel like? What does it sound like? How does it taste? Because Vermont has a certain unique spirit about it. It's palpable. And we can breathe it in, moment by moment, breath by breath. Together. It's what we share. So I fell in love with history and books and stories when I was a kid. And when I figured out in college that I could actually get a degree in stories, history, I was gobsmacked, amazing. And I've been teaching and reading and studying and publishing around this theme of humans and stories for, gosh, almost 4 decades. It feels like Team Human is at a crossroads. What does our past reveal? And how can we best navigate our present moment? The early 1950s, Hannah Arendt warned the world that the next emergence of totalitarianism would not be from the left or the right, but from dull and faceless bureaucrats, we call them technocrats now, who would seek to govern globally under some sort of mechanistic, some sort of scientific, some sort of technocratic regime. When we outsource as Vermonters our collective decision-making to one central idea or one small group of people in lands far, far away, whether it's COVID, whether it's climate change, whatever it may be, we run the risk as Vermonters. This is why it's so important to create the freedom within Vermont and globally to have these sorts of conversations. Who's funding the propaganda? Who's funding the censorship?
George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer. Good Morning America is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer.
Brought to you by Pfizer. Pfizer. Pfizer.
How can we, as human beings in community here in Vermont, step back, take our time, and have a rational, civil conversation about all of this? When we aspire, we breathe our way towards a higher goal or vision. When we inspire, we breathe good energy into one another. And my favorite, when we conspire, a conspiracy. What that means is we're literally breathing together. So let's breathe together, let's conspire as Vermonters to design this place we call Vermont as best we can, flowing forward.
All right, folks. Welcome back into the studio live with Dr. Rob.
Amy, that was well edited. I it was really powerful for me to hear that with headphones on in this studio that you and I have helped build over the past many years with so many other beautiful humans here in Vermont. And that is a brand new documentary film version of my book. I haven't actually really even shared it publicly yet. It is on my website. And I have sent it to a few friends just to kind of get their take. But I think we could just call that what we just heard, I suppose, a bit of a world premiere, I suppose.
How exciting. Yes. Here on WMRW, folks.
I know, and it wasn't the whole thing, but gosh, you really captured some of those moments that I spent some time really with our mutual friend, Cal Hopwood. Tip of the hat to Cal, who produced the film, put together. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, I thought you would probably put some real thought into how those phrases were put together. So, and I wanted folks listening, if in case they don't know about you, to realize, you know, all the different media formats that you utilize. Mm. You've been a TV producer, maybe radio too, at some point. Yeah.
Well, here at WMRW, I helped raise money to buy the antenna for the station, again, with dozens of other committed locals, and then ran a radio show on this Monday night radio show with Dan Eckstein. Hi, Dan. Tip of the hat to Dan, who lives up the road, for years before I got swept up in school board work. But yeah, so stories are powerful, and it's one of the things that we humans do best. It is, along with breathing, I would say, one of our superpowers.
Yes.
As Team Human.
Yes. Yes. And for, I don't know how many years you've been doing a show, the Plan V show.
Yes. And that's another interesting story. We had almost 200 Plan V TV episodes recorded and published on two different streaming platforms, YouTube, which is owned by Google, Alphabet, and Vimeo, which struck me as fairly independent of a platform. But because I, like you, was asking pesky questions about the COVIDtopian situation, I accrued a number of quote-unquote strikes against my Plan V TV channel on YouTube and Vimeo to the point where they completely deplatformed those podcasts and that channel on both YouTube and then, a few months later, on Vimeo. So all of the work that we had done, including you and I had several conversations, disappeared into the void. And that was a wake-up call for me. Because as you and I both agree, I think, it is so important for we humans to be able to be in dialogue with each other to be curious, to ask questions of one another, and to listen and engage and debate the great issues of our time, which COVID certainly was, and to watch the complete memory holing by algorithmic design, I would add, of hundreds of hours of conversations with Vermonters and people from around the world on a whole range of topics, food, medicine, yaks, mm-hmm. breathing, history, yeah, including with so many high-profile humans, Dr. Mark Crispin Miller, Dr. Matthias Desmet, who wrote the book on mass formation, published here in Vermont by Chelsea Green, The Psychology of Totalitarianism. All of that was completely destroyed. And it made me realize that what we're up against as a species, what we're up against here in the Team Human universe, is something fundamentally anti-human. Mm-hmm. Some people call it the machine. Some people call it the technocracy. Some people call it the transhumanist crowd. The Schwabians, for those who are familiar with Klaus Schwab, the erstwhile leader of the World Economic Forum, which, let's be clear, is the for-profit global partner of the United Nations. Team Human is at a very interesting crossroads at the moment, and I don't know that any of us fully realize, A, what we're up against, but B, how powerful we are.
Yes. Yes. I think it's surprising that people are not realizing the crisis and opportunity.
Yes, as our Chinese friends like to say. The character in Mandarin for crisis is the same as opportunity. And that's where we are. So Being Human, the film, which, again, one can watch for free at the homepage of drrobwilliams.com. It's 11 minutes. It's not long. But it really is a love letter, I think, to Vermont. Mm-hmm. It's a love letter to Vermonters. It's a love letter to our Team Human spirit when we breathe together, when we conspire, when we inspire one another. We breathe good energy into each other. When we help each other aspire, breathe our way upwards to become the best versions of ourselves we can possibly be. And that's really what we should all be in the business of doing day in and day out, is holding space for each other to become the best versions of ourselves over time and in place. So that's kind of a summary of that film. And it's inspired, actually, by a real environmentalist who I'm guessing many of your listeners are familiar with. He's in his 90s now, still with us down there in Kentucky with his wife, Wendell Berry, who I think is one of the most, maybe the most wise, sagacious environmentalists maybe ever in U.S. history. And he wrote a little book called Life is a Miracle back in 2000. And this little book, and I'd encourage folks to pick it up. It's, I don't know, 80 pages. It's a quick read. But, you know, Wendell's a beautiful writer. And he wrote this book, Life is a Miracle, as a response to and a critique of Harvard entomologist E.O. Wilson and his idea of consilience, a book called Consilience, in which Wilson argued that science, with a capital S, should be the unifying paradigm for all human knowledge. And Wendell Berry read this idea in Consilience and said, no, that's a dangerous idea to make science as powerful and important as the scientific endeavor is. To make science the universal, the unifying paradigm for all human knowledge would be a very bad idea.
Mm.
And I won't steal any of Wendell Berry's thunder, but in that book, Life is a Miracle, Berry has this moment. Now, remember, this is almost 25 years ago now, when Google, Amazon, Facebook were just emerging out of the womb, let's say, of our digital age. And Wendell Berry says, I can imagine, he writes in this book, Life is a Miracle, and I put this quotation at the beginning of the film version of Being Human. He writes this, I can imagine a time in the not too distant future, he says, where humans will have to choose between living as creatures or living as machines. And I think that time is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah. And if that has a bit of a sort of a Lord of the Rings feel about it, I think that all of our greatest stories by the Tolkiens and the C.S. Lewis's and the of the world, which we still read and celebrate with our children and our grandchildren, those guys who wrote these beautiful epic tales, and there's so many others, understood well what was coming. They write about it in nonfiction form. C.S. Lewis, critique scientism, J.R. Tolkien, critique scientism. You can see those critiques in their books, The Chronicles of Narnia, the Space Trilogy for C.S. Lewis, the Lord of the Rings with Tolkien, The Hobbit. They were very much aware, I think, what was coming. In the same way that Hannah Arendt, who was a contemporary of theirs, was aware and wrote about this too in her book, The Origins of Totalitarianism and Elsewhere. So here we are,
yes,
about to be 2025, and we must keep our wits about us, Team Human.
Yes, yes. And that's why the clips that I did pick, I felt like we're really honing in on your interest in healing, you know, Team Human, and getting us, you know, through these times, bringing us together, helping us rely on each other. Your love for, you know, American history, I'm sure, has something to do with that. Where are we right now with American history and...
Yes, well, at its best, you know, the United States was founded... as a place, and many would say, and as an idea, in which individual liberties, let's say, were to be protected and respected in creative, let's say, opposition to larger forces like the state governments, and what emerged by the second 100 years of the U.S. project, corporations. For profits. So, you know, our finest founding documents make this very clear. The Declaration of Independence is the spiritual zeitgeist, I would say, of the United States of America. And in the Declaration of Independence, of course, Jefferson and John Adams and Benjamin Franklin, the other two authors of the Declaration, make it very clear that we humans are endowed with rights they called inalienable. These are rights that cannot be taken away unless we allow it. And by that, I mean spiritually, right? These inalienable rights, of course, very famously, are the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to pursue our happiness, as long as, you know, we're not encroaching on the happiness of others. And I think we sort of forget just how radical, and by radical, I mean getting to the root cause of the human phenomenon, let's say, how radical a document that was, not just in its time, but I think it certainly resonates for us now. And the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which came 20 years, not even, 15 years later-ish, were an attempt to codify, constitutionally speaking, that balance between individual liberty for Team Human, and how we might go about organizing ourselves politically, economically, spiritually, if we think about the First Amendment, which insists that Congress shall make no law infringing upon a number of important freedoms, press, speech being the most important, freedom of speech, I would say, press, religion, etc., the right to assemble, all of those things, which, of course, were dramatically curtailed, let's say, during the COVIDtopian moment, which went on for years, and I think is still haunts us, I would say. We could talk all day about U.S. history, but I think just to remember the... vital and central importance of those three documents, the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments that were added to the Constitution in 1791, the same year that the Independent Republic of Vermont, which was its own country for 14 years, decided, cast its vote down there. Everyone sees us on the interstate down there in Windsor, Vermont, the birthplace of Vermont, they say, cast its vote to join the United States after 14 years of independence. And so that was a very fateful year. And I think that this particular 2024 year will be remembered as a very fateful year for a number of reasons, not least of which is, you know, the conversation, I think, around the elections, both locally and state here in Vermont, and also nationally.
Yeah. So so let's just pause for a moment on that moment that we're at, because that's where, you know, when we're doing our show here today, the election was just a couple weeks ago.
And gosh.
I think it was divine intervention that we put the show off till after the election. It just sort of series of events happened.
Yes.
And it was perfect because it's brought up a lot of fodder and it's right up your alley here with as far as bringing people together. And
Yes. It is sort of good timing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I may disappoint some listeners and some viewers when I say this, but I seceded peaceably from the U.S. electoral process 20 years ago. I vote. I do my due diligence as a human in community, but typically I vote in state and local elections here in Vermont, and typically in the national arena, I tend to cast my vote and perhaps a little bit of money. I invest into national political figures who seem to me to have Team Human's best interests in mind. So, for example, I was a Ralph Nader voter, right? And then in 2016, I think I abstained from that one. But in 2020, I wrote in Tulsi Gabbard, who at the time, for those who aren't familiar, former Democrat, served in the armed forces, was a congresswoman from Hawaii in the Congress, and was summarily called, can I cuss on the show?
No.
Summarily called out the nonsense that was engineered by the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, during the 2016 Democratic so-called primaries, where the Clintonistas threw the Bernie people under the bus. And Tulsi, who was a rising star in the party at that time, called it all out. They threw her out of the party, and so she wandered in the wilderness, as I think so many Democrats seem to be doing these days. You and I both heard that the other night on our call with 50 other Vermonters who were scratching their heads about what's going on. And then this in this particular election, just to put all my cards on the table, he was on the ballot here in Vermont, Robert F. Kennedy. Not because he's perfect, but because I think he is very much aware, and he gives speeches on this every day, it seems, about what Team Human and the U.S. populace is up against in the form of the blob, to use the term the Obama people refer to, the permanent bureaucracy, the deep state, the unelected government, whatever you want to call them. So all that is to say that bringing it up to this present moment, I feel like in some ways it was nice to kind of feel that the pendulum, which had swung so far in a particular direction, let's say towards the globalists, let's say towards kind of the culture of woke, let's say, it was nice to feel at the national level like the pendulum may have reached its apogee. it's and maybe it's kind of swinging back. Who knows? I think anybody who follows national electoral politics closely knows that since our votes were moved off of paper ballots onto electronic voting machines, we really have no idea just how it goes when it comes to how votes are counted, not to mention all of the other shenanigans, which we don't have to get into here. But there's certainly other forces at work behind the facade, let's say, of two-party electoral politics. And maybe I'll just leave that there for now. But I do think it does represent kind of a moment of healing. I love your word for that. Because I think folks who kind of took for granted that they were always right and virtuous on both sides, let's say, of the manufactured aisle, red and blue, lib and conservative. I think it gave everybody pause. And I think people are still kind of uncomfortably stuck there. And, you know, out of discomfort comes perhaps opportunity and perhaps maybe even epiphanies, even if they're small. Revelations, even if they're small. So for everyone who knows someone or felt this in them, their own bodies and minds, I'll use Mr. Trump here because I think he's probably the best reference point. If you know someone who was suffering from what I call Trump derangement syndrome, Trump as existential evil, and I know many people in my world who suffer from that, or conversely, if you're suffering from what I call Trump devotee syndrome, Trump is an angel who is sent from God to save us and can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. Wherever you fall on either one of those extremes, I think it's time to kind of coax yourself out of the spell, if you will, and look around and recognize that your friends and neighbors here in the Team Human community love and care for you, and perhaps you love and care for them. And maybe we can all conspire to lean in and acknowledge that life is large and complex and nuanced, and we're all in flow and we're all flawed, but we also have such great potential. So how do we optimize ourselves rather than weeping and rending our garments and gnashing our teeth because we, you know, were given an outcome that we didn't think was the right one? Thoreau perhaps said it best years ago, that old curmudgeon, Henry David Thoreau. Since mm-hmm. we're talking about U.S. history, he said this. He said, I think this was in Walden, My Life in the Woods. He said, "Cast not your vote merely that slip of paper, but your whole influence." Mm. Cast not your vote merely that slip of paper. Cast your whole influence. I think that's what we're called on to do in this moment, Amy, is to each of us individually and in the communities where we find ourselves, our families, our friends, our neighbors, our towns here in Vermont, which are so decentralized and beautiful still in many ways, simply to hold that space for love, for curiosity, for compassion, for courage together. Mm. And just remind ourselves how much we share, how much we have in common. Because the machine, back to the machine, the global transhumanist, transhuman project, let's say, is and has been for many years programming us towards ever greater division. Mm-hmm. And I began to fully understand this when I saw my little podcast, Plan V TV, disappeared into the digital memory hole. Mm. It was like, okay. So they want us to think either one way or another. Yes or no. Mm-hmm. Red or blue. Mm-hmm. Black or white. Liberal or conservative. And that kind of dualistic thinking is the way a binary code works. Mm. A binary code which drives all of our digital processes is simply a series of ones and zeros, of yeses and nos. There is no nuance. There is no gray. There is no complexity. There is no room for error, right? There's no slippage. And I'm beginning to think, Amy, tell me if, and then I'll turn it over to you because I'd be so curious to hear what you think about this. I'm beginning to think that part of this project of merging humans with our digital technologies, which the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, everybody who's a globalist is kind of on record as saying they wish to do, mm-hmm. going back to the ideas of futurist Ray Kurzweil at Google from decades ago. We want to merge humans with their technologies. This kind of yes-no binary code thinking is the hallmark, the central hallmark maybe, of turning humans into something else.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Yep, definitely. I really appreciate the way that you don't seem to get snagged on the, you know, black, white, yes, no, you know, blue, red. It really takes a lot of courage and patience and heart to sort of step back and see the bigger picture. There are so many hooks trying to grab us. And that's why I think it was really encouraging seeing the results of this election. I know some folks out there are gnashing and tearing their clothes. And I know how that feels because I did that during COVID. I mean,
you and I both for years.
Yes.
We were gnashing our teeth.
And being silenced and not able to speak. And so I feel like that adversity that we faced, it was big. And it does need to still be processed. But it forced us to find the best in ourselves, right? I mean, we had to be so clear in our hearts about what we wanted, what our intentions were.
You're absolutely right. And I know you and I both leaned heavily on each other as friends and neighbors and co-conspirators and colleagues in the critical media literacy space, which we kind of dropped into flow years ago around. We leaned very heavily on each other and on, I think, a growing, I would say, health choice and medical freedom community here in Vermont, but also nationally, because we recognized at the end of the day that creating space for choice for Team Human, mentally, physically, spiritually, choice like freedom of speech, which is about choice in a way, is so vitally important to keeping the human project going and flowing.
Yes.
And when things are mandated from above, and I talk a bit about this in the book and the Being Human documentary film too, we run the risk when we outsource our thinking and our feeling to forces beyond ourselves and our immediate communities, we quickly will find ourselves in some trouble.
Right.
Yeah. And we've seen this totalitarianism on the right, you know, the Nazis are perhaps the most famous example. Seen this totalitarianism on the left, you know, the communists in Russia and even more intensely under Mao and Maoist China. And as Hannah Arendt said, the new creeping or, you know, rushing, galloping totalitarianism seems to be emerging in the form of these technocrats, you know, the folks in the white coats behind the computers with the modeling, mm-hmm. right? If you think about issues that we've been programmed sort of with an official narrative around climate change, mm-hmm. COVID, critical race theory, capitalism smashing, you know, I call these the four horse seas. Mm. There's the four horses of the apocalypse. You may remember these are the four horse seas of the apocalypse. The ones that we get shouted, that we hear shouted about, right, incessantly in the major organs of media, COVID, critical race, climate change, and capitalism is evil and must be destroyed. And the problem there, of course, is not capitalism itself, but monopolies. Mm-hmm. Which are, again, our framers, our founding mothers and fathers understood. So we really need to put our big kid pants on, let's say, and really grapple, I think, with these official narratives that have been programmed into the culture at so many levels. I think, again, most of us find it hard to step out from them and see them perhaps a bit more objectively. And you and I have had good training with critical media literacy. And I think we are battle tested with the COVID for sure.
Yeah. Media literacy inoculated me. That was what got, how I saw through it Same. Right away and so quickly and knew to do my own research. And it is encouraging that we are at this place where people are starting to see past the stereotypes. You know, you used Mr. Trump as a great example. It's like a scapegoat, right? That just all the evils of the world are on Mr. Trump. But the world, or Americans anyway, voted differently, if we can believe the results. There is some hope there. And you hear people saying all the time things now like, Alex Jones should be our press secretary, you know, and things like, and when you hear that, I just am so elated. Not that I think he would necessarily be great at it, right? But just the idea that folks want more voices at the table. Yeah. We are all created equal. Yeah. Are we or not? I think we're really being tested on that.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Well, so let me disappoint. And again, I so appreciate what you're saying. Let me complicate things a bit more, if I may. So the Democratic Party, let's talk electoral politics for a minute. So the Democratic Party ran a half-dead guy with a mask on from his Delaware basement for president in 2020. They conjured what appears to be 20 million more votes for that particular election than we have seen in decades.
Wait. Are you attacking the big lie here?
Presidential election.
This is the big lie.
The big lie.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Great.
So
good for you.
It seems that I call them the actors playing Joe Biden, were installed. And then with Ms. Harris, and again, I want to be as objective and nonpartisan as I can, she was in no way a serious presidential candidate for 2024. Mm-hmm. Her own party had written her off 4 years ago. So I'm wondering, Amy, like, what's going on? Either the Democratic Party wanted to lose, or I'll use the phrase puppet masters. But let's just say the forces that back the Democratic Party, we're familiar, Wall Street, the bankers, big tech, big pharma, et cetera, wanted them to lose. And maybe they wanted Mr. Trump back in the White House for reasons which we might speculate about. But all of this is to say, without trying to be conspiratorial about it, if the Democratic Party had really wanted to give Mr. Trump a run for his money, they would not have selected Ms. Harris as their candidate and her vice presidential candidate, who I won't say anything about him. But it was curious to see how quickly the torch was passed, non-democratically, by the way, from the actors playing Biden to Ms. Harris. How quickly she was able to amass $1 billion? I think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that money went. I'm sure it was well invested. And then how quickly she's been disappeared, along with Mr. Biden, or the actors playing Mr. Biden. So it's all very curious. And again, this may sound odd or conspiratorial to folks who operate at kind of a New York Times, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN level of discourse, but there is a rich and robust independent community of journalists from across the political spectrum all over the world who you and I are deeply plugged into and working with and have been for years, some of the smartest minds of our time, who really understand kind of some of these deeper fundamentals at work. And I don't know, having laid all that out, I don't know. Right. What the agendas, let's say, are for the reinstallation of Mr. Trump, and I'm, you know, everyone's watching the appointments, and you know, it's nice to see RFK in the mix. It's nice to see Tulsi Gabbard in the mix. I think that's good. Generally, back to your point about diverse voices and having different perspectives on something, on a political issue. So, but to bring it back around to Team Human and healing, I think our primary job, all of us, is to put down the mouse, close the computer, step outside into nature, breathe in the air together, meet our neighbor for a cup of coffee, go for a walk in the woods, bring ourselves back around to our families and our friends and our small businesses, those that have been able to kind of survive through the COVID-topian situation. And, you know, put our shoulder to the wheel as playfully as we can and keep doing the good work. We're 2 weeks out from the election. Everything's still standing. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems like they're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. How can we optimize?
Yes. A crisis and opportunity. Yes. And like, what did Wendell say? Not just your vote, but your what behind it?
Your whole influence.
Your whole influence.
How do we cast our whole influence? And maybe it begins, my students I teach will know what I'm about to say, it begins with conscious and strategic breathing.
Yes.
because we breathe in and out 20,000 breaths per day. And every one of those breaths is an opportunity for us as Team Human and as individuals to really optimize our health and wellness. As we respire, as our dear friend James Nestor says so beautifully in his book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, he says, respiration is reciprocation. So whenever we take a full breath in and out, we are, and we're aware and sort of paying attention, we recognize that we are deep in flow with the rest of the living and breathing universe. That's just a biological fact. And our indigenous brothers and sisters well understand this. Mm-hmm. I know folks who are listening have read Braiding Sweetgrass by Dr. Robin Wall Kimmerer, the subtitle of which is Scientific Knowledge, Indigenous Wisdom, and the Teachings of Plants. And in her particular indigenous tradition, everyone is well aware that we're in this constant reciprocal exchange of gratitude with the rest of living and breathing creation. And it begins and ends with the power of our breath in communion with nature, with our plant brethren and sistren. So imagine, and it's very humbling when you realize that you are a small but vital part of this much larger, beautiful natural ecosystem. So let's start there. And we can learn how to use our breath to reduce anxiety, to manage our anger, to bring down our stress levels, to draw more energy into our body, to clarify our mind, to energize our spirits for the good work ahead. If we taught all of that in elementary school, we just taught kids how to breathe better. Mm-hmm. I think that would go a long way to make America healthy again.
Well, you know,
if I may quote RFK for a moment.
We were doing breathing exercises in the school that I worked at
for years leading up
to the masks.
Yes.
And then they wanted to put...
Let's talk about masks. this is your area of speciality,
yes,
one of them.
Yes. Well, it's. I think it ties in really closely today with the idea of, you know, media literacy. And like you're saying, breathing brings us back to reality, basically.
It grounds
us. And relationship.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have some podcasters. I have a little clip I want to play for you take on this.
Let's do it.
This is just an example of, and I just ran across these guys the other day. I had never listened to them before. It's the Cartier family on YouTube. These gentlemen, they're very, very cool. And they review media. They watch clips. So they were watching The View, which is that TV show that they were.
Joy Behrhart and Oprah. Whoopi Goldberg and the crew.
The crew, and it was the day of after the election.
Ooh, let's listen.
So they're breaking down, and they had just watched like clips of The View, folks freaking out, right? Trump is this. He's the scapegoat. He's going to take us to hell, and there's nothing we can do about it. We're doomed. And so this is what these folks had to say about the media in America and what the vote said. I thought you'd be interested in hearing
let's
this.
Listen.
All the rich people and millionaires and people on TV and celebrity endorsements, you all failed. Yeah. Y'all told people how to think. Y'all told us what our problems are from sitting in your high, fancy castles, living your nice, luxurious lives, and you failed.
Yeah, Joy Reid said it.
This is what you get.
She said we tried everything we could to help Kamala, and they did.
They did.
You know what's crazy? That's why I
and she lost.
What confused me. They said the number one problem was the threat to democracy. Kamala was literally a threat to democracy.
Literally.
That's how people felt.
We just watched that woman that did not get elected to her position.
But that's the thing, bro.
She wasn't even elected in a democratic process, which is ridiculous. I want to say something, guys. She said that they didn't believe him about democracy. No, they didn't believe you. They didn't believe you. They didn't believe all the thousands of celebrities or however many endorsements she had. They didn't believe the mainstream media and all the rhetoric and the fear-mongering and propaganda y'all pushed. Nobody bought that because Trump won the popular vote for the first time. He won the election in dominant fashion. And I want to thank y'all because now we know that the American people are smarter than the media, and we're not going to sit around and be talked down to by people who get to be on TV.
The people is the new news, guys. So we really...
All right. The people are the new news.
Yes,
I love that.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great clip. And I think they're right. And again, to the extent that, you know, the engineering of elections at the national level is, alas, I think, a reality, it is curious to speculate without really knowing why the outcome was what it was. But there's no question that voters turned out in favor of choice, freedom, not being lectured at by rich folks on their, you know, well-paid media positions in so-called news channels. And that is encouraging.
It's super encouraging.
It's very encouraging.
You know, all these podcasters, all these different people getting up to the mic and, you know, and taking it to the streets and interviewing people on the streets.
Yes. And I hope, and you will, I think, especially appreciate this. I hope that this represents the ever accelerating death of what we call the legacy media, right? Which is funded, of course, by very powerful corporations like the pharmaceutical and big tech industries. In favor of honest, authentic, long-form conversations, which we, you know, shorthand as podcasts. There was a lot of chatter, I'm sure you noticed, that this was the podcast election. And that was often said in a somewhat derogatory manner. Mm-hmm. You know, podcasts, you know, a bunch of, like, Joe Rogan sitting in his studio having three-hour conversations with Mr. Vance and Mr. Trump. And I thought to myself, yes, those are called human conversations.
Right.
Where,
old school.
Old school. Well, yes, we're just interested in having a conversation, asking questions, being curious, not being afraid to disagree, to challenge one another, to agree also and find consensus. And to the extent that podcasts have emerged as the single most powerful and popular form of news media now, I think is a hugely encouraging sign.
Yes, isn't it? It's worth celebrating.
Yeah. So what you're doing here and what we're doing here at WMRW is to be celebrated. And I think as we get more and more kind of pushed towards herded, towards the transhumanist vision, our way of resisting as a species will be and is to lean into the storytelling space and the conversational space. Because increasingly in the world of deep fakes, where someone appears on a news channel and you have no idea if that's manufactured by a computer, artificial intelligence, or if it's actually a real person emitting real words from his or her mouth, those long form conversations with people, real people, real humans we know and trust, whether it's locally here or nationally, will become ever more important.
Yes, yes.
And that's exciting.
Right. I mean, that is sort of the antidote to these deep fakes. And I love that you address that in your book about how to start, you know, learning media literacy. People of all ages need to start to understand what we're watching, how it's produced, produce our own. Find things that we agree with and don't agree. I don't agree with, you know, all of the interpretations that this Cartier family, you know, podcast folks.
Those guys are fun.
Yeah, they're really fun. They're really fun. Some of their interpretations I don't agree with, but the information and their point of view, I value.
Yeah.
And I want to know what they're thinking.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing RFK was saying on the campaign trail, he was dropping one statistic that I thought was really important for everyone to meditate on. It was this. The folks who vote Democratic now, the Democratic Party, the stalwarts, seem to own 70% of the wealth in the United States. The folks who vote Republican seem to own about 30% of the wealth in the United States. Now, assuming RFK is right about that statistic, we have seen a complete political realignment in that the Democratic Party, which used to represent the working man and woman, labor unions, working class people, until the 90s when the Clintons and the Gores and the Obamas and the Bidens and their ilk pivoted towards big pharma, big tech, big media. And the Republicans seem to, and I think Trump is so good at this, rhetorically anyway, represent ordinary working class people. I think that's a huge That's a huge phenomenon we have to acknowledge and talk about.
Yeah, I think that switcheroo, you know, has, I hope, given people a new perspective.
I hope so.
If they can step back and see what actually just happened.
Yes, if they can awaken.
Yes. Take a big breath, everyone out there. Oh, fantastic. I thought it would be great, Rob. Let's see if I can find it here.
Gosh. Oh. God, that flew by.
It did fly by. I know. We're right here at the end already. I know. We're toning it down. But would you read this one paragraph right from the beginning of your book for me, please?
Sure.
Oh, I don't have glasses here. Oh, yeah. Maybe those would work. Let's try. Yeah, let's try it. Sorry about that. It is little.
Oh, no. That's okay. Here. Ah, there we are. Being human, then, is to breathe in this most miraculous conspiracy. As each of us is called to live a life of reciprocal gratitude in an ongoing dance with the rest of living creation, we breathe life into one another through the experiences and stories we share. By turns passionate, powerful, and poignant. And we extend our love and learning to the larger world, informed by what the rest of the planet's inhabitants have to teach us.
Yes, folks. If you are interested in hearing more about breathing and media literacy and all of these wonderful subjects that Rob has been studying his life, including the future of Vermont, we didn't even get to talk about Plan V and where we have landed now, maybe more ready for a second Vermont Republic than ever before. Please look up Dr. Rob Williams at drrobwilliams.com, and where you can find his free ebook, Beings Human, Almost Miraculous Conspiracy.
A most miraculous conspiracy. And the film, which is on the homepage. And thanks, tip of the hat to Cal Hopwood over there in Moncton for co-shepherding that project with us. And thanks for having me, Amy.
Yes, thank you too, Rob, for coming in. Have a great one.
You too.
All right, take care.
Breathe on, everyone.
Breathe on, everyone.
Where the cold winds blow, there's a shaggy creature with a coat like snow. It's the mighty yak, strong and grand, stomping its hooves on the highland sand. The mighty yak on the mountain tracks, with a big woolly coat covering its back, grazing on the grass in the cool crisp air. That big grand yak with so much hair. Horns that curve and a nose that steams, the yak lives where the sunlight gleams, carrying loads up paths so steep in the quiet mountains where the snow cap peaks. The mighty yak on the mountain tracks, with a big woolly coat covering its back, grazing on the grass in the cool crisp air. That big grand yak with so much hair. Geez, they give us treats in the Himalayas where the mountains meet. Living together.